I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania voters go to the polls on May 17th, and the race to fill retiring Senator Pat Toomey's seat makes this a closely watched contest. Who wins could determine which party controls the U.S. Senate. Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, Congressman Connor Lamb, and State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta are fighting it out for the Democratic nomination. Donald Trump just endorsed Mehmet Oz, while former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum just endorsed Dave McCormick to win the Republican nomination for the U.S. Senate in a very crowded field of candidates. There's another statewide race for governor since Tom Wolf is term limited. Attorney General Josh Shapiro runs unopposed for the Democratic nomination. It's another crowded field on the Republican side, and here are some of the frontrunners so far: Jake Corman, Lou Barletta, Bill McSwain, Doug Mastriano, and Dave White. Today on Radio Times, we catch you up on the May primary, the candidates, the issues, the endorsements, the money, the polls, and everything else. Our three guests know Pennsylvania politics. Let me introduce them to you. Katie Meyer, very familiar voice here at WHYY, political reporter for WHYY. Katie, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Joining us also is John Baer. He's now a columnist for Patriot News and Penn Live. And John Baer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And also with us is Chris Borick. He's professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, director of the college's Institute of Public Opinion. Chris Borick, nice to have you with us as part of our trio of guests. Do we have Chris Borick? We will get him set up. In the meantime, we do have our two guests, and we do have a clip that I want to play. And this is Trump's endorsement, former President Trump's endorsement over the weekend of Dr. Oz. Let's play that clip.
By the way, I endorsed another person today, Dr. Oz in Pennsylvania. Dr. Oz. Great guy, good man, Harvard educated, tremendous career, and they liked him for a long time. That's like a poll. You know, when you're in television for 18 years, that's like a poll. That means people like you, but he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Let me start with you, Katie Meyer. Is that gonna play among Republican primary voters in Pennsylvania?
I mean, I think there's no question that it's not insignificant. I think I've talked to a bunch of people who are within the party who are kind of observers of this race. And I think the consensus is, like, it's not a make or break. Trump has considerable power, especially over, you know, there's a part of the party over which he has considerable sway. Mm-hmm. But it's not the entire party. And so it's not like this knocks Dave McCormick out of the race. It's a blow to McCormick for sure. And I think, you know, you saw him very explicitly and aggressively sort of seeking that endorsement and seeking to paint himself as close to Donald Trump. There was a New York Times interview with Trump that came out unrelated to the Pennsylvania race, but it far down in the story, it was mentioned that McCormick was sitting out on a patio, had been meeting with Trump. So, you know, he wanted this. And so Oz got it. I think obviously people have kind of said, okay, well, you know, there are very obvious similarities between Oz and Trump, both TV guys. That could be part of the reason why Trump feels, you know, good about Dr. Oz. But yeah, I think it did take some people by surprise for sure.
Well, to you, John Baer, it does seem like a very Trumpy endorsement, a Trumpian endorsement, that if you're good on TV, if you're popular on TV, you can win a political race.
As has been demonstrated.
Exactly.
The thing that I'll be watching, I mean, Katie's absolutely right. It's not determinative, but it certainly could be. And the reason for that is that I think people in your media market, in the Southeast media market, don't appreciate the strength that Donald Trump still maintains among Republican voters across Pennsylvania. This is something that gets measured in every Franklin and Marshall College poll. But it's interesting. Like most political popularity, it swings. For instance, last June, when the F&M pollsters asked Republican voters if they considered themselves Trump Republicans, 50% said they did. Half the party said they backed Trump and wanted candidates like Trump. When they did the same question in March, just last month, that number was 33%. Now, that's still significant, and in a very close race, and McCormick seems to be running a very competitive race, in a very close race, that could make a difference.
Well, I do want to play a McCormick ad just to give him a chance to respond, but let me get to you, Chris Bork, in on the conversation. He did get Rick Santorum's endorsement. Does that have cachet in Pennsylvania?
You know, Marty, a little bit. I mean, he's maybe a Donald Trump light. He was, in some ways, in Pennsylvania, he was Donald Trump before Donald Trump was the figure that he is now. But I don't think it carries a lot. I think just listen to John's, you know, take on Trump's pull, and certainly in GOP circles, the former president still has considerable clout, although potentially waning a bit. You know, most endorsements have very limited value, and I would probably put former Senator Santorum's endorsement in that position.
How about Trump's endorsement? I mean, especially in Pennsylvania, which was such a hard-fought race.
Yeah, as you know, this is a hard-fought race. It's a competitive race. People are still making up their minds, and the president, in, as John was mentioning, and most polling still has considerable weight, and particularly, just to add this for Dr. Oz, you know, as he's getting bashed by McCormick as being a rhino, that he's really a Hollywood liberal, to have the kind of voice in your party, the unique and powerful voice of Donald Trump vouch for you, can't be overstated. I mean, I think at a time when he was probably seeing his campaign in a challenging position, this was a certain boost within the Republican ranks.
Well, let me play a clip actually, it's an ad from Dave McCormick, and let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk about him.
When Mehmet Oz questions my patriotism, he's crossed the line. I joined the 82nd Airborne to fight communism. In combat, we faced down Chinese weapons. And like Trump, no one fought China harder for tough trade deals. I'm Dave McCormick. I approve this message because I'll fight for what Washington won't. We all know China created COVID. It's time to make them pay for it.
Fight China, save America. Dave McCormick for Pennsylvania.
Fight China, save America. What do you make of that, Katie Meyer?
Well, McCormick, this has been one of the things that's happened with him throughout the campaign, is he's faced some criticism for, you know, being perceived as soft on China in his business dealings. And Bridgewater, the hedge fund that he headed for a while, he was, you know, it's the biggest hedge fund in the world, has had sort of, you know, a closer relationship, or has sought closer relationships with Chinese investors in the past. And that's been something he's kind of had to answer for. So this is clearly sort of designed to head off those criticisms. And yeah, I mean, McCormick, he has the kind of background, as he's stressed, that like a lot of candidates would kill for. You know, he's able to pull out his military service to show that he has been close to Republican presidents and politicians for many years, that he has sort of that personal relationship too with Trump. But to John's point, I think, yeah, the fact that Trump now has endorsed Mehmet Oz, that gives Oz a rebuttal against a lot of this, that he, you know, oh, he's not a real conservative. Well, Trump endorsed him, so if he's good enough for Trump, he should be good enough for many Republican voters. And that's, again, this is the dynamic, right, that you've seen throughout this race. Who's more conservative? Who's more like Trump? Who has that kind of, you know, that card they can play? And this has given Oz a much more ammunition.
Well, let me go to you, John Baer, and pick up on you know, who actually lives in Pennsylvania, which I think is a question that could be raised both about Mehmet Oz and also Dave McCormick. Is that an issue to Pennsylvanians? I'm asking you to speak for, you know, millions of people here, but do Pennsylvanians care if someone, you know, just moved into the state or has several houses, one of which is in the state of Pennsylvania or the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania?
Well, if either of these guys, and one of them is going to win their nomination, people are going to care in the fall, because you're going to hear a lot of that.
Yeah.
Right now you're not hearing a lot of it, because the people with the most money, Mehmet Oz and David McCormick, both are a little bit vulnerable on that issue. So there's no point in one accusing the other. I mean, they both came here as opportunists, clearly. They both have ties to the state, which is fine. McCormick's are a little stronger because he actually grew up in Pennsylvania. But for now, I don't think that's really on the chart because it has come down to, rightly or wrongly, a two-person race on the Republican side.
Well, and let me toss this back to you, John Baer, but I also want to hear from all three of you. How much money has been spent so far? Do we know?
Yeah, a zillion. I think in the governor's race we've topped 11 million. We'll probably end up at 15. In the Senate race, I think we've topped 40. We'll probably end up at plus 50.
For the primary, you're saying?
For the primary.
Mm-hmm. Katie, sounds like you wanted to add something.
Just a little bit of context.
Yep.
For context, when Tom Wolf won his primary and nobody had ever heard of him, he was polling at 2% when he entered the race. He spent $10 million.
He personally.
On the primary, yeah.
On the primary, yeah. Katie, you want to add to that?
Oh, just to say, I mean, again, we always knew, especially in the Senate race, that this was going to be unprecedentedly expensive. And the major factor here is that McCormick and Oz are both extremely wealthy. And we actually don't know very much still about McCormick's personal finances and how much he has personally put into the race because he announced his candidacy officially pretty late in the game, so he hasn't had to file those things yet. But we know Oz, for example, has put millions of dollars of his own money into the campaign. So that's a factor here. And so then you kind of go down the line to, like, you know, the next candidate, Jeff Bartos, who's had more trouble getting momentum in this race. It's funny to look at him as sort of, you know, the man of the people or the guy with normal finances in this, because he's actually also a very wealthy real estate developer. But just compared to Oz and McCormick, it's a different level of rich. So that, again, John mentioned, you know, when Tom Wolf ran for governor, he, also a wealthy man, put $10 million or put his own money into the race. But we're just seeing, again, a different level of rich here.
Chris, we're almost up on a break here, about a minute or so. So I'm assuming you got money. The money goes into ads. I mean, we're already seeing lots of ads on TV.
Yeah, we've seen an extraordinary amount for so early in a primary campaign. And I think, I heard John reference Tom Wolf. And Tom Wolf really kind of set the modern standard by putting so much money into his campaign in 2014 to introduce himself and establish himself early. In many ways, I think McCormick tried to follow that playbook. You know, he was on the air in December and January a lot with these get-to-know-you ads, and those ads were focusing on his Pennsylvania roots. He knows that was going to be a challenge for him, along with his hedge fund connections, but he lives in Connecticut, and he's trying to make a Pennsylvania pitch. So a lot of ads with him, you know, growing up in central Pennsylvania, playing football, hunting with his friends, and having his friends vouch for him. And that was a big investment of money early to try and put him in a different tier in this race.
Well, we're going to take a very short break, as promised, and then get back to our conversation talking about PA politics. We got a primary in about a month. We're focusing on the race for the open seat for the U.S. Senate and the governor's race as well. We want you to join our conversation. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also call 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio Times here.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
On WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Pennsylvania voters go to the polls on May 17th in what is considered one of the most consequential primary elections in the country, especially when it comes to the U.S. Senate. We've been talking about some of the Republican candidates for that open seat. We're going to focus on Democrats and also focus on the race for governor, talking about the candidates, the issues, the polls, the spending. We'll spend some time talking about the debates. We want to know how you feel about this slate of candidates, and we've been focusing also on Trump endorsements. Katie Meyer, WHYY political reporter, is among our guests, along with John Baer, columnist for Patriot News, Penn Live, and Chris Borick. He's a professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, also director of the college's Institute of Public Opinion. Well, let's focus on the Democrats, the three leading contenders on the Democratic side, the open seat for the U.S. Senate. This is John Fetterman, Malcolm Kenyatta, and Connor Lamb. We put a montage together. It's about a minute, 22 seconds.
There's a lot of great towns in Pennsylvania that feel like their community's best days were a generation ago. No one deserves to be abandoned. All these communities deserve to be helped.
John Fetterman, he runs for lieutenant governor, reformed the office, got rid of the LG's mansion, saved taxpayers' dollars.
He's a different kind of character, I'll tell you.
A Democrat with backbone does the right thing no matter what.
I'm Malcolm Kenyatta, and I'm running for the United States Senate.
Government hasn't worked for working families like mine. I know what it's like to see an eviction notice, to work a minimum wage job, and unfortunately, my story isn't that unique. Who should government work for? We need policies that actually speak to working families and lift them up. We have to choose. Are we going to go down the path of darkness? Or are we ready to bring a new day to Pennsylvania?
Connor Lamb believes our democracy is worth fighting for. As a young man, he joined the Marines, then became a federal prosecutor. And when a mob stormed the Capitol on January 6th, Lamb stood up to the Republicans, calling out their lies. Our best chance to beat the Republicans this fall. Lamb has defeated the Trump machine 3 elections in a row.
We work as if our democracy is on the line, because it is.
Katie Meyer, this is a really interesting race. When you hear those 3 ads, race.
Yeah. So, those 3 ads, I think you see all 3 of these candidates making their pitch. And specifically, you know, the polling so far has shown Fetterman with a pretty commanding lead. He has, I think, the most name recognition. He's been on cable news a ton. And so even, you know, across the country outside of Pennsylvania, he's a known entity. Lamb has lagged him a bit. You know, he's, again, trying to make that case that he is the sort of candidate who absolutely can beat a Republican. He's got that proven track record. And then Kenyatta has lagged Lamb a little bit, not by as much as Lamb has lagged Fetterman polling-wise, but he has struggled to raise money. He hasn't had quite as much PAC backing, but he has had quite a few endorsements, labor endorsements specifically. And, you know, he, again, is stressing himself as a different kind of candidate. He would be, you know, the first gay black man to serve in the U.S. Senate. So that's kind of been his pitch. He's also, you know, he's pretty young, as is Lamb. But, yeah, I mean, we've seen them starting to really attack each other in ads, on debate stages and in forums. And the dynamics, the cases that they've tried to make in those 3 ads have really come to the fore.
Well, to you, John Baer, I know Lamb and Kenyatta have done some debates without Fetterman. They have criticized him for that. Fetterman did not get some key endorsements here in Philadelphia. Connor Lamb did. Does that tell us anything?
Well, I mean, no. For two reasons, Marty. Politics is at our face all day, every day, and will be for the rest of this cycle. So things like people not showing up at forums, they're not really debates because they pretty much agree on most things.
Yeah.
At forums in March, April, will be forgotten well before the vote in May. In terms of endorsements, the force of endorsements, with the exception of people we've already mentioned, has really diminished over time. Parties no longer can name their candidates, pick their candidates. And I really question whether there are more than a handful of politicians in America whose endorsements in a statewide race would make much of a difference. So the fact is, Fetterman raised a lot more money, did a lot more work, has spent years, literally since 2016, traversing the state, every county, as many towns as possible. And in some ways, I mean, stylistically, certainly not policy-wise, stylistically, he gets viewed the way Donald Trump did in 2016. Look at this guy. He can't possibly win a United States Senate race. Look at him. Just look at him. I mean, people thought that about Trump winning the presidency when he first got in the race. But when Fetterman's story becomes known and when we see his success in polling and fundraising, it becomes a different thing. And this is really one of those primaries where the choices are good. I mean, these are good, smart, effective politicians. One of them has more resources than the other two.
Yeah, and that would be Fetterman. Well, yeah. Picking up on that and going to you, Chris Borick, I mean, look at him. Look at John Fetterman. He's, what, 6'6". He wears hoodies and shorts in the middle of winter. You know, I occasionally you'll see him in a suit. And not to be totally shallow here, but that's what he looks like. That's how he's out often in public. And is that something you think that will resonate with voters?
Yeah, it's so interesting. He has a unique brand in Pennsylvania and maybe nationally in terms of politics. And that's not only in his image, his physical image, but also his approach to issues and trying to find this kind of new lane, if you will, I think. As John referenced with Donald Trump, he found a new lane, and it is an issue, right? Image matters in politics. We all know that. And his presence, his appearance, I think, is part of the story. And how that plays, you know, both in a primary and in a general election in Pennsylvania, I think is relevant. Does he for older voters? Pennsylvania is an older state, and its electorate is older. You know, does his image necessarily resonate with some older voters, more moderate voters, in a place like suburban Philadelphia? I think it's a reasonable question. It's not that it should be image should dictate these things, but we know it does. And so, how he transcends that, and can he in a way that is part of his unique brand? I often, you know, call him Braddock in Harvard, because he's, you know, he's a smart policy driven individual, but he also has these connections to working class Pennsylvanians through his time in a town in western PA that had seen tough times.
Katie, you want to weigh in on his look, his appearance?
Well, sure. And I think, you know, the look is part of the much bigger package that John Fetterman has decided could work in a place like Pennsylvania. And I think comparing his approach to Connor Lamb's approach is actually really useful, because both of them, I think, have this understanding and come from a part of the state where, you know, Democratic voters who were, you know, traditional Democratic voters, labor voters, people in unions, went pretty strongly to Trump, began to vote for Republicans. And so both of them, I think there's this intrinsic part of their political philosophy that is aimed at trying to recapture some of those voters. But they've done it in super different ways. Yeah. So Lamb, you see him positioning himself as sort of the least far from the median voter in Pennsylvania. He's very moderate. He will show himself like shooting guns in his ads, you know, showing that, oh, I'm not that kind of a Democrat. I'm culturally more similar to you, and I'm also like a nice young man. And you can trust me with, like, you know, the party endorsement. I'm a conventional candidate. Fetterman has gone the opposite direction, and he's tried to show himself as a guy who sticks to his values and doesn't change because it might be politically feasible. So you see him, you know, one of the things he did as lieutenant governor, which was kind of a long seen as a third rail of politics, is really aggressively trying to pardon people who were convicted of crimes. And he thinks, you know, not, you know, given sentences that were too harsh or who were innocent, that kind of thing. And he's been very forthright that he believes that, you know, the criminal justice system's broken and these kind of changes are necessary. So that's just one example. But I think you've seen him be a much more forthright progressive, whereas Lamb has tried to moderate himself. But they're both going for the same kind of voter, which is really interesting.
Well, John, it's always, and one of the reasons we like to have people on this show who are not from, you know, this Philadelphia region is I think we often forget what the rest of the state is like. And it's interesting to hear both you and Katie and Chris talk about how the voters out there are sort of a different stripe, especially among the Democrats, than you might find around here.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, Pennsylvania, I've often said, is much like the United States, with two big urban centers at either end and a vast rural, mostly conservative middle. And when that middle votes, it can make a difference, as it did in 2016 in the presidential election, as it almost did in 2020. So there is, I mean, it is a big state, and there are a lot of diverse elements to the state. And Fetterman, all three of these guys, look, Fetterman, Malcolm, and Connor Lamb, they certainly understand what's out there, what's at stake, and who they can most appeal to. Again, the difference is resources. I mean, any of the three would make, you know, a good Democratic candidate. I think Malcolm Kenyatta is Moore is kind of ahead of his time. Look, a very smart guy, very aggressive guy, knows what he's talking about, wants to do the right thing. And I hope he stays in public life, and I imagine we're going to see him again. He's not going to win this primary, but that's not his fault. As Katie mentioned, he's young, he's very young, and he's from a section of the state that the rest of the state hates right away. You know,
and that would be Philadelphia, right, John?
That would be Philadelphia, sure. Yeah. People in Philadelphia don't understand the level of animus across the state towards Philadelphia because of its politicians, because of its reputation for corrupt politicians, because of its crime, and so on. And so almost anyone coming from that market running statewide, with the historical exception of Ed Rendell, has a real problem in Pennsylvania.
And that is John Baer, who joins us along with Katie Meyer and Chris Borick. We are talking about Pennsylvania politics. The main reason is there's a primary on May 17th. We've been focusing on the race for the U.S. Senate. Interestingly, Pat Toomey is retiring, which means there is an actual open seat in the Commonwealth here and some really fascinating candidates and races. We're going to talk also about the race for governor. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. Any questions or comments, or if you've made up your mind, we'd certainly want to hear from you. Call us at 1-888-477-9499, or you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. Let me go to you, Chris, and I don't want to bury the lead here. What do Pennsylvania voters, what do they care about? What are they looking for? What are they concerned about? I'm assuming, you know, inflation is probably the number one issue, but what should we know about that?
Yeah, when you look from an issue perspective, inflation is nearer at the top of the list right now. People see and feel inflation every day, and we know historically that gets when those concerns are elevated, they're placed at the feet of the party in power. And then in Pennsylvania, we usually look at and nationally the executive, either the president or the governor. And I think that's weighing on Democrats across the country. The pandemic remains a major issue. You know, in our polling, a lot of Pennsylvanians are excited to move past the past 2 years. They want to move to a more normal period. But the realities of an ongoing pandemic, I think, have also taken a toll on Democrats. We've seen over the last year the standing for Biden and Wolf in the state really decline in their handling of the issue. And those things are, I think, part of the broader headwinds that are facing Democrats in this cycle. So economic issues, health issues dominate the list. Energy issues right now are rising in terms of importance in Pennsylvania and nationally. I think you see the debate on natural gas, fracking, given our prominence as one of the leading producers of natural gas in the country, rising in this issue. Candidates are dealing with it. They're trying to craft out their messages on it. So those are among the top tier issues that are on voters' minds as we head into both the primary and the general election.
Katie, can you pick up on the fracking issue, which is, again, so interesting and I think in certain ways can divide Democrats?
Sure, yeah. And well, one of the things that we have seen, though, is Fetterman and Lamb, for all of their policy differences and for all of Lamb saying that John Fetterman's too liberal, too progressive for Pennsylvania, they're pretty similar on that. Fetterman has said he doesn't support a moratorium right away on fracking, that there needs to be a more gradual drawback on that kind of resource extraction because it is a huge driver, or at least it is not, I wouldn't say huge, but it's a driver of jobs in western Pennsylvania. And even more importantly, I think it's culturally seen as an important driver of jobs. So whether or not there are actually the number of jobs, it's kind of beside the point sometimes. But that's one of those things where Fetterman and Lamb have kind of come together. Kenyatta, you know, Philly guy, different perception of fracking out here, has said he supports a moratorium right away. And that's kind of gotten him some points in the green energy communities among environmental groups. That's been, again, it's a very Pennsylvania-specific issue. It doesn't affect a huge portion of the state, but I think culturally it does have a lot of weight.
Do you agree with that, John, culturally?
No question. Katie's right. And Marty, let me offer a little fun fact. You mentioned
it's always
good to have fun facts,
it
right?
It is.
You mentioned we have two open seats, an open seat for governor and an open seat for the United States Senate. The last time that happened in Pennsylvania was in 1958,
Whoa.
Which is some time ago. And a Republican won the Senate seat, and a Democrat won the governor's seat. And so my question is, will history repeat itself in 2022?
Well, that was going to be my question to you, John, since you raised it.
I think it's possible, yeah. I think, you know, as Chris Bork mentioned, Democrats face a headwind in this election, in the general election. There's pollsters are telling us that when people are asked about Republican-Democrat members of Congress in Pennsylvania, they're saying by 5 points they'd vote for a Republican over a Democrat. We've seen changes in voter registration. The last midterm elections, Democrats in Pennsylvania had a voter registration edge of like 815,000 votes. This month, it's down to like 580,000. Either Democrats or Republicans are registering more people than ever. So that gap is closing. The enthusiasm factor that we keep hearing about appears to be real, to the point where Republicans are happy now to answer the phone. Remember how we used to hear, well, Republicans are underrepresented in pollsters because Republicans hate academics and press, and they don't want to even talk to them. Now we're told Republicans are answering the phone, are very enthusiastic about voting, and say they're definitely going to vote. So there's going to be a lot of factors up against whoever the Democratic nominee is for Senate, and against Josh Shapiro, the only Democrat running for governor.
And I do want to talk to our academic on our panel today to find out if Republicans are talking to him. We are talking today on Radio Times about Pennsylvania politics, giving you a bit of a preview of the May 17th primary and some closely watched races. And as John Baer just said, two open seats, which is hasn't happened in several generations. And again, you can join our conversation. We always want to hear from you about the issues you care about, the candidates that you like, the candidates you don't like. Call us 1-888-477-9499 and email us radiotimes@whyy.org. Much more after this short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on
supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking about Pennsylvania politics with Katie Meyer, WHYY political reporter, John Baer, columnist for Patriot News, Penn Live, and Chris Borg, professor of political science at Muhlenberg College, also director of the college's Institute of Public Opinion. I do need to pick up on what John Baer said right before the break. Chris Borg, are Republicans now talking to pollsters?
Well, I take John's support well. We are seeing a little bit of a increased response rate among Republicans. Still, a big challenge to get folks in general to talk these days. That's a conversation for another day. But John's point about cycles, right? When I'm giving lots of talks around the state now, and I always lead before I get the candidates with cycle. They're not determinative who wins, but they are incredibly impactful. And it's just going to be a tough year for Democrats to run. We know historically a lot of those metrics, generic poll, ballot questions, point in that direction. So all the indicators are pointing there, which makes it all the more imperative for Democrats in terms of who they select to put up. We have a history of candidates fighting against currents that are in their, in their face, that they're moving against, right, and being successful. And sometimes it takes a break too. You get a bad candidate that emerges from the party that has the wind at their back, and that's a possibility, I think, in Pennsylvania in this cycle. And if the Democrats have top tier candidates up, they can, in a state like Pennsylvania, overcome a pretty stiff headwind that they're moving into.
And Chris, just a quick follow-up. Scranton native Joe Biden, obviously our current president, does he have coattails in Pennsylvania?
I wouldn't call it coattails, and if they are right now, they'll be probably negative, as we see. You know, when you have a cycle that's often punitive to the president's party, that's occurring at the same time as the president's approval ratings are not very good, it seems to be more harmful to his party in this case. And I think those conditions are very real right now. His polling numbers aren't great. They're not historically low, but they certainly aren't in the position where you can ride that to success, even with his deep connections to Pennsylvania.
Well, Katie, let's talk about that other open race. It's the race for governor of Pennsylvania. The current governor, Tom Wolf, is term limited. Attorney General Josh Shapiro is the, sole and only Democratic candidate for this position?
Yep. Shapiro is alone, which really gives him a free ride so far in the primary. I mean, he's raised a ton of money, and he has not really been criticized very much, even though Republicans have started to try to launch attacks. But yeah, the Republicans, it is a very, very crowded race for the GOP primary for governor. And so all of them have had a lot of trouble even just distinguishing themselves among their own field. And just yesterday, we saw a really sort of tumultuous day for that particular primary. You want to talk about that,
Marty? I do, yes. Go ahead, Katie. Very interesting. Yes.
Yeah. So we saw two major things happen. We got an anti-endorsement by Donald Trump. He said that nobody should vote for Bill McSwain, the former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, who Trump appointed. And that was because Trump, you know, still obsessed with this idea that there was some sort of fraud in the 2020 election, which caused him to lose. There's no truth to that whatsoever. He says that McSwain should have investigated this fraud that didn't exist more aggressively, and that he's a coward for not doing it. So that's one thing. And we can, you know, if you want to get into the dynamics there, we can. But the other thing that we saw happen was that Jake Corman, who's the Senate President pro tem in Pennsylvania, the most powerful member of the Pennsylvania Senate, he dropped out. His poll numbers have been bad. His fundraising had slowed down, and he filed his paperwork to drop out. But then apparently Trump called him or something, or made some sort of contact and said, no, Jake Corman, don't drop out. And so Corman reversed the decision within a couple of hours and is still in the race. So I guess, you know, if we want a top-line takeaway from yesterday, it's just that Trump has enormous power over this very crowded primary.
I mean, did Trump endorse him, or he just said, don't drop out?
He didn't know. He did not endorse him. He just said, don't drop out for some reason.
Do you understand what's going on, John Bair?
Marty, what I understand is that politics in Pennsylvania never disappoints.
And you would know, right?
If you want to be a political reporter, you want to be in Pennsylvania. I mean, it's just amazing. What a year. It is impossible to know what Donald Trump thinks. I mean, that's clearly been demonstrated over time. But the two things that occur to me are as follows. One, he could want to keep the field fat. If he wants a candidate who is not polling as well, or, you know, Doug Mastriano, for example, is polling well, but needs a large field in order to win that primary. Mm-hmm. So the more people who drop out, the less his chances are of winning. He's the well-known election denier, Trump supporter from Franklin County in South Central PA. Lou Barletta, the former congressman, the first congressman to endorse Donald Trump's presidency, who reportedly had a fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago last night, might also be in the running. So Trump could be just telling Corman to stay in the race to help himself rather than to help Corman. But if you're Corman, you're not polling well, you haven't caught fire, the possibility of a Trump endorsement is enough to say, yeah, why not?
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
If it happens, I shoot to the top of the pile. If it doesn't happen, hey, I already withdrew once. I can do so again.
And how big is that pile, John? As you said, it's a fat race. 9, 10? I kind of lost count.
9 candidates.
I think it's 9.
9 candidates. Yeah,
it is. It was 15, and by filing date, it dropped down to 9.
So let me go back to you, Chris Borick. So if you got a lot of candidates, then I guess you could win with, I'm just making up a number here, then 17% of the vote. Is that what John Bair's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it is a crowded field, and it really is. Sometimes we have crowded fields, and you say, okay, there's just a candidate that stands out. And I think, you know, Republicans have been looking for who that might be, and until yesterday or the last few days, it seemed that maybe Bill McSwain was that candidate, right? He is, you know, former prosecutor, had connections to Trump through his Justice Department work, you know, former Marine, kind of has the image, has got some resources and seemed to maybe be emerging. So yesterday was, as John and Katie were alluding to, just a major day to have a negative endorsement from, again, the key figure in your party. It shook stuff up. And, you know, of course, you know, bringing Jake Corman from the brink of dropping out to being back in. And it's just a dynamic race. And so could this be a race where you have a candidate emerge victorious with a pretty slim plurality, maybe 25, maybe 30%. I think there's a genuine possibility of that in the race. And who would probably like that? I think it would be Josh Shapiro, because as we talked about before, maybe you get a break. Maybe you get someone, you know, I'll identify, you know, Doug Mastriano or even Lou Barletta. You know, if you get one of these pure kind of Trump wing candidates to emerge, you know, Barletta lost by almost, you know, 15 points to Bobby Casey a few years ago in the state. It was a different cycle, but these candidates might struggle in statewide races. So really a dynamic open race.
Katie, is Josh Shapiro, is he a popular attorney general in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that people generally tend to have a positive impression of Shapiro. He's got a couple major accomplishments he can point to, one of which was that massive investigation into historical sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. He shepherded that to completion as one of the first big things he did as AG. You know, he's gone after the gas industry in various capacities. He has, you know, been part of trying to protect elections after the 2020 election, something that does appeal to Democrats. So, yeah, absolutely, Shapiro has some cachet. But I, again, like, it so is going to depend on who emerges from this GOP field. This is going to be less of a referendum on Shapiro and more of a combination of the kind of year that it is for Democrats, which, as John has mentioned, is not good. And also, you know, who do we get? Does McSwain somehow struggle out of this race and continue to bash Shapiro for, you know, the crime that exists in Philadelphia, even though that's not totally his situation, his whole deal? Or do we get somebody like a Lou Barletta, a Doug Mastriano, who has kind of gotten to the top of this pile of very, very crowded candidates, a crowded Republican field, and kind of struggled through to the general, but then is going to struggle in a general election? I mean, those are the things that are going to determine how the general turns out.
John, let me go back to you. You mentioned that that Democrats have an advantage, a smaller advantage in terms of voter registration, about 580,000 more Democrats registered. And yet Democrats struggle in this state. What explains that?
Well, I think the cultural changes that started with Donald Trump, when the center of the state started voting, everybody noticed that. Everybody who represents those areas, Republican congressmen, Republican lawmakers, and so they pumped that. And so, you know, you will see a growing sense of cultural conservatism when people are polled and asked, "Are you liberal, conservative, or moderate?" You can track it over the past several years. The state has become, or at least voters in the state are telling pollsters, they've become a little bit more conservative, a little bit less liberal, and that has made us a lot more purple than we used to be.
And to you, Chris Bork, I mean, that's a lot about voter turnout, right?
Oh yeah, and we've seen that historically, that Republicans outperform Democrats in turnout. We also have some, you know, some interesting things. You know, you have to register with the party to vote in primaries. That lowers the amount of independents in the state. Interesting discussions going on in Harrisburg about that matter right now. Yeah. But so you get individuals that might, you know, be legacy. They might be with the party for a long time. They're shifting their views. They're shifting, especially in the last decade. And it leads to sometimes a little bit of a mirage in terms of Democratic strength in the state. that we have. I will quickly touch back on Shapiro. You know, 2020 is a pretty good indication, I think, of his strength. Of course, we saw Joe Biden win the state. But other statewide Dems running for, you know, treasurer, auditor general lost in that race. Shapiro won. He got a historic amount. A lot of it was driven by the election itself with so much interest in the presidential race. But he outperformed even Biden in that race. He is a very strong candidate from a Democratic perspective that's not going to be really damaged by a primary. And again, he's heading into a tough cycle, but for Democrats, I think that's about as good as it gets right now.
And Chris, this is an off-year election. Can you predict voter turnout for the primary based on past primaries?
Primary elections are historically low, but back to the point, you know, I think John cited it's not been since 1958 that we had two open statewide seats like this with Senate and governor's races. So these races, I think, are, and the amount of money and effort that are put into them will probably boost primary turnout to significantly higher than we'll usually see. But significantly higher still means relatively low. We might be talking in the 30s percent turnout rate, you know, rather than what we might expect, you know, in a presidential race where we see 60 plus.
Yeah. Katie, let me go to you. Yeah. John, go ahead, John.
Just wanted to add one thing to Chris's point on Josh Shapiro. I don't think enough people appreciate the fact that he has no opposition in the primary. You can't find another instance in Pennsylvania history where a Democrat running for governor who was not an incumbent had no opposition in a primary. Democrats don't do that. Democrats love to run for office, especially high office like governor. So the fact that he was able to clear the field at a time when politics is red hot is an indication, as Chris said, of his strength, at least among Democrats. I mean, this is no novice politician. You have to do an awful lot of groundwork over an awful long time to end up to be the only person running for Democratic governor in Pennsylvania in an open seat.
Katie, we're almost out of time here, but I just want to touch briefly on the actual act of voting in Pennsylvania. Do the rules that were in place in 2020, are they still in place in 2022?
Yes. So there's been a lot of chatter about potentially changing how elections work in Pennsylvania. But luckily or unluckily, we have a legislature and governor that just continue to deadlock on this. So they have not really passed any big changes. So that means also, and this I think is very important to note, we've had this issue, especially in Philadelphia over the past few years, where it just takes a really long time to count ballots because we expanded mail balloting, but we didn't give counties more time ahead of the election to begin processing those mail ballots. They just take longer to process. So that's going to still be the case. They haven't fixed that, even though there's kind of general consensus about what the issue is and how it should be fixed. So one thing I can tell you is that it's going to take a while to count all of Philadelphia's ballots. It's just a really big county. So that's something we can look forward to. But yeah, I mean, other than that, we're pretty much going to stay status quo. You know, the primary, as you've said, is May 17th. You have to register by May 2nd. The last day to apply for a mail ballot is May 10th. And you got to get that in by Election Day, by 8 p.m. on Election Day. So those are some important dates.
Indeed, they are. And my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Katie Meyer, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She is WHYY political reporter. John Baer, thank you for joining us on Radio Times again.
Marty, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure for you too, John. And he's columnist for Patriot News Pen Live. And Chris Bork, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
It was such a pleasure, Marty. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Professor of Political Science at Muhlenberg College, Director of the College's Institute of Public Opinion. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times. Under programs, you can also download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Radio Times producers are Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. A big shout out today to engineer Charlie Kyer and to Susan Greenbaum for helping us out this week and today. I'm Marty Moscoe. Thank you so much for joining us.